each gig is my audition for the next gig.
Yeah.
I did Justin Timberlake. So the next pop guy is like, who did Justin?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
For
sure. Or I did Rihanna. So of course, the next pop girl is saying, well, who did Rihanna? And I did Nicki Minaj. So it's like, we know that that's going to work. Adam did that. Your work speaks for itself.
Absolutely.
And so they will find you if you do good work.
Go. Let's go.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the show. We have an incredible guest for you today. One of the greatest MDs to ever do it. A Grammy-nominated artist himself, as well as supporting all the biggest artists in the world. He has musical directed. Here comes the list.
Uh-oh.
Justin Timberlake, Jay-Z, Kanye West, Eminem, Janet Jackson, Dr. Dre, Nicki Minaj, Jonas Brothers, Al Green, the Isley Brothers, Maroon 5, and Jill Scott. He's also music directed 4 Super Bowl halftime shows. I don't know if anybody else has ever done that. Paul Rosenberg. You know, Paul called you the unsung hero of Eminem's career.
I like that. I'm thankful for that.
He said you're one of the most important people to Eminem. You are Questlove's forever MD, and he called you the John Williams of musical directors. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Adam Blackstone.
Oh, you got the sound effects, too. I love this. What's up, O?
Good to see you, bro.
How you doing, man?
Thanks for coming, man.
I'm glad to be here.
You are on a run. You're everywhere right now.
I am. This has been a long time coming. It's like we keep passing each other, and I'm like, oh, man, I got to go and, you know, do this and do that, but I'm happy to be here, man.
We found
the time.
Glad we scheduled it.
Yes.
I know you've been busy.
Busy, busy.
Man, because not only are you musical directing Everything Everywhere I Look, but you got your own artist project.
Yeah.
That is also seems to be Everywhere I Look. So you're doing a lot.
I'm doing a lot, but it feels good to step into the artist space to do something that I, you know, quote unquote, control and, you know, have a different type of stake in this time. So it's really cool. I'm excited.
Absolutely.
I'm excited for what's to come and what God has in store, for sure.
For sure, man. And I want to get all to the artist career and where you're at right now, but I kind of want to take it a step back.
Let's take it back.
I want to take it back to 2003.
Okay.
Your first big gig, right? Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the first big gig was Jay-Z, right?
Fade to Black. Yeah. Seems like so long. I guess it was so long ago.
It was so long ago, man. And I want to kind of take a moment to think of everything that has come in your life after that.
Yeah, that was a snowball effect from that one gig, for sure.
That one gig,
yeah.
Jay-Z with Questlove MDing it.
Yep. James Poison, Omar Edwards, Kevin Hansen on guitar, Frankie Knuckles on percussion, you know. Just Blaze as the DJ.
Wow.
It was.
It's like the
crazy.
Roots Deluxe.
We called ourselves the Illadelphonics.
Illadelphonics, I love
it. That's what we were. And from, I have easy time telling this trajectory story is that I met this guy who was wearing a pink polo shirt from Chicago at the Jay-Z show. And he said, hey, man, I really love what you're doing with Jay, you know. After you done this, I think Omar was working with him at the time. After you done this, maybe come work. It was Kanye. So from Kanye, I met this Barbadian girl who was opening for Kanye. She said, yo, I like what you're doing. And her team was like, yo, you know, we're going to reach out to you. It was Rihanna. From Rihanna, I met, you know, Drake. And from Drake, I went on to work with Janet. And from Janet, I went through Jonas Brothers / Justin Timberlake because of Johnny Wright was managing Janet at the time. And it's just so many things in between, but that is a big lesson for me on preparedness.
Yeah.
Because if I would have come to that Jay-Z gig just in my mindset as just the bass player and, you know, wanting to just fall back and, you know, not make my voice heard musically.
Yeah.
Those relationships may not have been, how they turned out. So, you know, definitely be prepared no matter what you're called to do. I wasn't the MD on that gig.
Yeah.
But I feel like I made a splash enough and made myself, needed enough and known enough to develop those relationships.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched it recently, Fade to Black, and you guys coming out in the production lifting, and you go into Izzo, and you're ripping on bass.
Thank you, man.
And Questlove's deep in the pocket, and you're 20 years old or something.
Yeah, 23. Yeah, 24 years, 22 years ago. Yeah, I was 20.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. Yeah. And it's crazy because for you to have Jay-Z as a platform to be your first big gig, which of course came from Questlove and the Philadelphia connection that you were in, that whole scene was such an incredible moment at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's crazy that you jump into Jay-Z, you get given Jay-Z the opportunity,
yes,
which then leads to Kanye and leads to Rihanna, et cetera, et cetera. It's like just this steady flow of relationships.
For sure.
But you came in at the top as a young kid, because clearly Questlove must have just really seen it in you even when you were at that age.
Yeah, and even getting to Quest, I must say, was a different, path. In Philadelphia, when I moved to Philly in 2000, I'm from Jersey, born and raised in Jersey. Me and my family moved to South Jersey, which is very close to Philadelphia. It's the Jersey side. But
yeah,
moved to Philly in 2000 to go to college. Started going to any and everything that I can play the bass at. Jazz clubs, restaurants, bar mitzvahs. I was church, of course. You know, I was just trying to do it all. And walked into, my friends invited me to an open mic at a spot called The Five Spot, which ended up being the Black Lily Festival, which was the most foremost soulful festival. It was in Philly, but to me, I'm going to say up and down the East Coast, everybody in there from, on any given night, from Bilal to Music Soul Child to Jill Scott to NDIRE to Erykah Badu to Flowetry, and one of my good friends, Dwayne Moore, who's just bassist extraordinaire, was playing for, the house band local group Jazzy Fat Nasties, and he was about to go on tour with Flowetry, and he asked me, did I want to do the house band gig at the open mic. I did that. Lo and behold, the manager of the house band gig was the manager of the Roots, Richard Nichols.
Wow.
And that relationship developed, and I was just a studio rat with him, man. Just, leaving school 4 p.m., going straight to the studio till like 4 a.m. if I had to, and then going back to school. So I was doing that for a long time. And I think that, he passed the word to Questlove, like, yo, it's this kid in here that's, he might have had a sauce, know what I mean? And he's dedicated and hardworking, and we were helping put ideas together for that next Roots album, which was Phrenology. And then, from that, again, word of mouth from the Roots manager, Richard Nichols, who has passed away, rest in peace. He put a lot of us on, too, as young kids, because he nurtured us. He showed us the business. He was paying us cash. And as a college student, I thought I was rich. I was like, yo, I got $500 this week. This week, not today. Just for the week. I'm good. I can eat. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't no Uber then. It was like, I can get a cab if I need to go somewhere. And he was really taking care of us and sowing into our gift and spread the word to the higher up Roots camp.
Yeah.
Because if you know about the Roots, man, we like a full mafia out here. It's like Amir's reach has touched there's so many olive branches that he has just sown into.
Yeah.
And I'm just thankful that in 2001-2, I was one of those people. So that when the time came where he got the call for Jay, it was him that got the call. He was able to bring me along.
Wow.
Yep.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And really, it's like those relationships, like how do you balance all these relationships?
I mean, those are still my friends. Yeah. Dwayne Moore is, we talk at least 3 or 4 times a week. Like we're on a thread. Him, Derek Hodge, and Dad Trubit, those are my guys. And so, even talking about how he gave me the opportunity in 2002, 2001, 2002, We're still doing that for each other.
Yeah.
The balance of the relationship is what this business is about.
Yeah.
It is the higher, I remember Miss Debbie Chase told me this, the higher up you go in the music industry, the less it is about music.
Mm.
And that kind of like sucks a little bit. It's mm-hmm. it's a stinger if you think about it.
Yeah.
But she basically was telling me that make sure you maintain good relationships with people, because yes. no matter how good you are, if they don't want to call you back to do a certain gig, or you rubbed this person the wrong way, or you were mean to this person, or you weren't on time, it doesn't matter how good the music is that you do. They want to have a good working environment. So I balance relationships probably more now than I practice.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not necessarily bragging on that. I'm just saying that's where my, you know, my job requires. When I was younger, I was able to do more things at the same time.
Yep.
But the higher up I went, the higher the quality was demanded from me. So
absolutely.
I like to try to, you know, I used to be able to do 10 gigs at a time. Now I'm doing two.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm just doing them, in my opinion, at a very high quality. But then again, one of my other ministries that I love to do is to just to bless people with opportunities and stuff and gigs, if that happens to be gigs, and that's just what it is. So the things that I'm turning down, I'm definitely saying, hey, call this person,
try this person.
And that's with no, you know, me not owning or holding it to them. It's just saying, I've seen this young kid, I've heard this young kid, try this. You know?
Absolutely.
So it's been cool.
Well, you're so far along in your career too. And I mean, you got the BBE hat on right?
Always.
And you're running a company, man.
I really am.
Just be playing bass and practicing.
Yeah, no. Yeah. But then, you know, I hear Damo and I hear Derek Hodge and I hear Wayne and I heard Eric Ingram the other day. I'm just like, these dudes on bass are just B-dub, like online. It's just like, oh my gosh, like, you know what I mean? So I got to figure out the balance to make sure my bass plan stays up a little bit to par. But yeah, it's definitely a business. I'm CEO of my business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's a different mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And I want to dive deep into BBE, but to stay on this trajectory of yours, right? Like you did Kanye West tour and you do Glow in the Dark tour.
Yeah, Glow in the Dark.
It's not just, I mean, it's like, these are epic tours.
So I just have to say this. Like, I didn't jump from that Jay-Z straight to Kanye. It's like, there is so much in between that people, you know, wasn't social media then. So
right.
It's like, you may not know, I was doing Vivian Green mm-hmm. and I was doing Jill is the one that really, to me, put me on as far as like the MD title of it all. Jill
Amazing.
Scott. And that was her coming off of, you know, multi-platinum albums.
Oh, yeah.
So 2005, I was doing Jill. It was her first like big arena type of run. In between there, again, I was doing Music Soul Child, I was doing Vivian Green, I was doing Jill Scott, I was, you know, doing a very, very young John Legend, you know,
mm-hmm.
I was playing at church. I was in the theater, you know,
this was the 10 gigs at once.
Yeah. I was doing it all. So I don't, you know, the steps that it took for me to get to Jay, then to get to Kanye, there's so much in between. I was going to school.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As well, and honing in on my composition chops and jazz chops. But when I got the call for Kanye, he was leaning in another direction to grow the band. And he had this idea to, you know, do this Glow in the Dark thing and make it theater at the end of the day. That's what I like to call that tour.
Absolutely.
And I hear, you know, like people talk about how that tour kind of like changed their lives a little bit, you know what I
mean? Sure.
So I'm thankful to have been a part of that.
Yeah, I saw that tour, man. It was a movie.
It was definitely a live
intro
movie. Yeah,
everything about it is
scored crazy. Yeah, man. Just shout out Jeff Basker. He was very instrumental in that, and we went through a myriad of different bands, but like that was the moment in time for sure.
That's incredible, man.
Yeah.
And that was your first huge tour that you were music directing.
before, after Jill Scott, yes. Yes, I would say Jill, like I said, kind of gave me the opportunity to be in charge.
Right.
Our first show on tour, I met Teddy Campbell and Ricky Minor.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were playing with Queen Latifah.
Yeah.
So that's when I knew, I was like, oh, we, you know, we belong.
Yes.
And we were young.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, we belong. And so Kanye was the first, I'm going to say, pop star.
Right.
That I, you know, was able to
be. Were you ever arenas selling out immediately? Yeah, man. All that stuff.
Like the craze. Yeah, it was just nuts. Like Stronger had just came out.
My God.
And, you know, I wasn't even that familiar with Daft Punk at the time. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is crazy. Like, you know, how do I translate this sonic palette to a live space? And so he trusted me to do that. And it was cool.
It's crazy that you bring up Ricky Minor, because back then, you know, you see Ricky Minor and you're like, oh, wow.
He's still, TV god.
Yeah.
And still is.
Still is. 20 years later and like.
Yeah. I mean, even like, you know, based off of relationships, man, those are my great, great friends. Absolutely. Teddy and Ricky. I met them the first day of what that was called, the Sugar Water Tour.
Yeah.
And then even I forgot to say, Teddy, we developed a really cool relationship, Teddy Campbell. And he said, man, like, you know, my wife is about to go on tour. And, you know, as a church boy, Mary Mary is like Destiny's Child to us. You know what I mean? Like, they still, everybody knows that's my favorite group of all time.
That's awesome.
And so I worked with Mary Mary. This is all before Kanye still. You know what I mean? So
Tina Campbell.
Tina, shout out Tina. Erica Campbell, Warren Campbell. And that they allowed me to be in charge and do my thing and put some arrangements together. So all of that, again, is stepping stones to where I was going with Kanye, and even being able to try out some weird, maybe not too good chords and, you know, progressions and sounds and stuff like that. Like, all of those gigs prior to that allowed me to, you know, get my chops together.
Man. And Teddy Campbell is the episode right before this one. So we just had Teddy on, and we're talking all about, of course, Tina and Mary Mary and everything. So make sure to check that out if you didn't see it. But
check out that. That's my family right there.
So you're going from Jill Scott, which is super musical, into Kanye, which is just completely different. You know, like, and like, also, I'm assuming he's throwing curveballs.
It's always a curveball, yay. But I will say, you know, I got to be honest and say, you know, music at that time was super soulful, so it wasn't that different.
Right.
You know, the main difference, I think, was me making sure that the track was there. I hadn't really done a lot of programming per se to play along with hip hop tracks. I come from the roots, so we did everything like live. Even though even playing with Jay and stuff like that, there was more of a trigger system in 03, but Kanye was really like, yo, I worked really hard on this snare sound. Like, let's strip the drum set away, and like, how can we trigger the sounds, and maybe we play percussion on top of the drums and stuff like that. So it was a challenge for sure.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
So not only have you had so many of these amazing gigs, but you've retained them. Like, what is the key to retention of these gigs?
Youth. No, because I don't know if I could do it anymore at 42, to be honest. I write a lot of charts now. There's no shame in my game with that, so that I can actually forget it.
I'm
a chart guy, so that I can get the roadmap, still infuse my sound and my feel with the roadmap. It's like reading a book. Like, you don't memorize books.
Right.
I see music as telling a story, so I don't mind writing guide pages. But then I was definitely retaining it. Oh, it was a lot of practice, though. It was a lot of repetition. It was a lot of shedding on my own. It was a lot of making sure what you were listening to on a daily basis applied to your work life. You know what I mean? Like, if I remember getting the Janet Jackson gig, not to switch gears, but coming from the East Coast, I didn't do a lot of slap bass. You know what I mean? We would have considered that more of a West Coast thing, pop music thing, and I'm a roots guy. You know, we very much were round tone and sounding like Dilla and Pino Palladino and Slum Village, and, you know, emulating key bass on the live bass. So when I got called to do Janet, man, I immersed myself in Sam Sims and Ethan Farmer, so much so that I sounded like them probably for like a year. it was hard for me to get back to myself because I was like, and Terry Lewis, like I just was very much like, this is what the gig calls for.
Yeah.
This is what I'm about to really dive super heavy into that she doesn't feel like this Philly boy is bringing him to my gig. I wanted to do what she was used to doing. So I just immersed myself in that type of bass playing. And like, who better to study for me at that time was Ethan and Sam, and the originator of those records was Terry Lewis. So it was like I was in it. So, you know, the retention comes from just immersing yourself into what that gig calls for. Like when I was doing Kanye, I just was heavy, like Ye tracks, and listening to College Dropout a bunch, and listening to Graduation a bunch, and, you know, seeing how I was programming the synth sounds to match what was going on there. Yeah. See how I should leave some synth sounds in and like maybe play live bass on top of it for like Through the Wire, you know, which was a live Shaka sample. So I was like, okay, I can dig in live bass a little bit here. So, you know, it's just taking that approach to make sure that you are complementing the music. And then as you complement the music, you get to ingest what the feeling was in the songs. And so it just becomes a little bit more natural.
Absolutely.
To you like that.
So it's one thing to get the gig. It's another thing to keep the gig. How do you keep the gig for so long, especially when you're so busy and you're doing all these other gigs at the same time?
That's a good question. An easy answer is that, I never quit a gig. If I have to leave, I'm making sure the artist knows that, hey, unfortunately, at this moment that you've called me, I'm unavailable. But I'm going to put somebody better or just as good on, or better a lot of times.
Yeah.
And make sure that my input is still felt.
Yes.
And so that's how that happens, man. That's how I'm able to maintain. I still do that to this day. And that's when about 2012, 13, where BBE was formed, because people just started trusting my opinion and not necessarily needing me there.
Yeah.
But they were like, we want to see how you feel about how this sounds.
Yes.
And if you don't, if you have an opinion about it, you know, what should be better? Or who should we call to sing background vocals on a style like this? We know that you've done it all, even if you can't be there. Who would you suggest to play bass? Who would you suggest? And so that's kind of how BBE was formed. But again, I keep the gig, and keep is relative too, because at any time the artist has the ability to wake up and say, hey, Kanye said, I don't want to do a band no more. I'm going to just do a DJ. I'm going in another direction. I've had some female artists be pregnant and like the whole tour just, you know, get canceled or postponed or whatever. And when they come back, they're in a different direction and they may not use us. So keeping the gig is different. I just don't think none of these gigs are like ours, but that's a whole different conversation
for sure
that I think that people are afraid to talk about, because, you know, we find our identity in gigs. And I've never tried to really do that. You know what I'm saying? I'm super thankful of the names that you read off.
Yeah.
But I think that I'm so much more than just that.
Absolutely.
And so when you begin to lose yourself in a gig or lose your identity in a gig, it does hurt and feel weird when it's not, the gig's not yours anymore. And so you got to keep a little bit of a level head to know that we are at work.
Yep.
We work for someone.
Yep.
They have the ability to change their mind at any time. And then we're going to, hopefully, of being high value musicians, move on to the next thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But even with that, where there is no, there's no obligation to where they stay with you for even tomorrow,
let alone
10 years from now. So many of these gigs you've had for so many years.
Yeah. I think I've been able to help the artist, even if I'm not there. You know what I'm saying? I look at somebody like Jill Scott. Again, I've worked with her since 2004, 2005, and I am definitely far removed from being her MD right now. But if she ever called me, or her manager called me, or she's doing a TV thing and they needed something, that's my people. So it's like, I'm gonna always jump in and help. I think making myself available and of use to them always helps too, because, you know, I like to call it relational equity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna always be there for a bunch of. Rihanna could call me right now, whether I'm playing or not. She knows that I'm gonna come and help her.
And help, yeah.
Same with Jay. Same a lot of artists. And so what that allowed me to do is then in turn call them when I needed something, like doing my album Legacy. I was like, "Hey Jill, I have this record for you," and "Mary Mary, I have this record for you," or "Andrew Day, I have this record for you." And everybody said, "Cool," because they know what I hopefully have added to them over the last 20 years.
Yeah, that's a great relationship. Yeah, and they also trust that you wouldn't bring them anything that they wouldn't respect and
I don't
like.
Not that I've heard this direct per se, but like people are afraid of losing gigs. But at the same time, you keep the gig by making sure it runs smoothly. So no matter if I put somebody better than me on the gig, the artist then trusts that I'm never going to let them fail.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
So it's
for
like,
sure.
I that's the least of my worries when I can't make it somewhere.
Right.
When I can't make it somewhere, I need to find somebody that's going to prepare, study, hopefully, you know, bring what I'm bringing to the table, bass player wise or keyboard wise or whatever. And so that the artist looks back and they don't miss a beat.
Yes.
I can't worry about, you know, if they're going to then keep the gig.
For sure.
That's just not my concern.
For sure.
But I do find value in knowing that I've done my best to make sure that the artist and the show doesn't suffer.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's kind of how I approach the sub thing and also like the longevity of the gig.
Yes.
Because the artist then calls me back and say, "Hey, man, see if that person's still available. I know you can't be there, you know, but I need you to help me with this." And
yes.
So that trickles down through the years with different people.
When that happens in those situations, do you keep that within BBE when you do like a handoff, or is it like, how does that work?
As of late, BBE, mm-hmm. I am trying to have BBE be bigger than Adam Blackstone.
Yep.
And it wasn't like that for a long time, and still that crossover is happening.
Yep.
So yes, we have been music staffing people and tours for a while now, at least the last 6-7 years. But prior to that, it was still like a personal Adam Blackstone call, you know,
for sure.
Who do I recommend? But now that we have the catalog and the database and the Rolodex, you know, it still, you know, remains BBE. But again, if one of my guys is not the best for, you know, the Jelly Roll gig or Tim McGraw or Rascal Flatts or something that I'm personally working for, I got to get the right person to do it, because I'm hired as musical director to make sure that that ship continues to roll.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So back to you being on stage and being amazing. I'll never forget the first time I saw even clips of the 2020 Experience Tour, the Justin Timberlake tour.
Yeah.
Man, just like unbelievable. I remember, I mean, your bass playing standing out so much, and all the arrangements from even the show starting, like all the way through, was such a spectacular tour, man.
Thank you,
like,
very much.
You crushed it so hard on that. And I feel like that was like, it was so clearly like, and I really looked at it, I don't know if this was an intention, but I looked at it as BBE collect, like a collective.
That was one of the newer moments where he had been gone for 7 years.
Yeah.
And I felt, not in a negative way, but I felt the pressure to bring my squad with me, because I knew, in my opinion, they're the best.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, you know, me and Justin, I'll never forget, we sat in his car and he played me the new 2020 album. And he was like, "Yeah, so I'm thinking about this person, that person, that person." And I said, "You want me to be the musical director, right?" He was like, "Yeah." I said, "Well, no disrespect, man. I got to bring who I need to bring with me to give you what you're wanting."
Yeah.
And I felt very strongly about that, because some gigs don't call for me to bring my people, and I'll MD another band, or they may be existing already. So I'll come in like I did Maroon 5 or something like that.
Yeah.
But this was a fresh start for him.
Yeah.
This was a fresh start, a new pop idiom for me. Newish. And so he let me do that. And the Tennessee Kids was formed. BBE
so
was represented so crazy. And again, I'm so thankful I hear you say BBE, and I even see hear the outside world say BBE, but these people in this band and that might be under BBE or whatever we're saying, they are bosses and queens and businessmen and women in their own right as well. I'm thankful that they trust me to, you know, kind of collectively put us together. But you look at BFM, you look at rest in peace, my man Daniel Jones. You look at Justin Gilbert. It's like these people are all bosses in their own right. We just been rocking with each other for a very long time.
Absolutely.
For sure. And I ain't got to say nothing to Brian. Like, we just locked.
Yeah.
Like that. I don't know. He's the GOAT to me.
We so. You know, BFM, Brian Bridgemore was on the pod, and we talked about that with you, about his intention in trying to do that for you.
Yeah.
You know, trying to know where you're going to go and to just give you what you want without you asking for it.
Yeah, he does it.
Yeah.
Very easily now easily.
Yeah. It's been a long time.
We've been rocking for a long time. And again, like, you know, to not to keep going backwards, but when I watched him live in Hawaii with Ethan Farmer on Jen, it was like I saw them play together for a long time too, and I was like, "Yo, they him, Ethan, Rob Lewis, like they were just a different animal." And so it allowed me to know that somebody like Brian can adapt in any area. He's out with Pink right now. I know they killing.
Oh yeah.
But then, you know, Brian spawns for me what the next person I'm looking for has to do for me.
Yeah.
And then
sets a high bar.
Yeah. Here comes Mike Reed.
Man.
You know what I mean? Or here comes, you know, baby Brian. But no, Mike Reed is just so crazy. And then there's so many others, man, that I love, like, you know, that I play with often.
Yeah, yeah,
you know what I mean? There's so many musicians in general that I love, but who I have, you know, developed bass player, drummer, you know, rapport with is like Mike and Devin Webster and Boots Green.
Boots, yeah.
My boy Darryl Robinson. I've played with it so long. And Steve McKee. It's just like, you know, the hometown homies. And, you know, when I come out here, everybody knows I call Chris Johnson. You know, he's just a machine. And I got so much respect for him and so many others, but that was who has been the core for me. But
yes,
they all give me that Brian Fraser more like locked and loaded vibes. And one of those things, of those qualities, is coming prepared.
Oh, yes.
And we talked about preparedness a little earlier, but like that helps me to not have to, it sounds crazy, but focus on the music at all times. If I have to go to a lighting rehearsal or choreographer rehearsal, I know that my BBE squad is going to be prepared outside of me telling them what to do.
Yeah, you trust them.
I trust them with my musical.
Saves you time, keeps everyone together, keeps the bar super high.
For sure.
Absolutely. That's how you scale.
Yeah. So that's what I've been able to do in the past, man. You know, decade or so.
That's amazing. Cool. Let's talk about the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Which one?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I got them all written down here. So, yeah, in 2018, you did the Super Bowl halftime show with Justin Timberlake.
Yes.
2020, you did J-Lo and Shakira.
Yes.
2022, you did Dr. Dre, Snoop, Eminem, Kendrick, Mary, 50, the, you know, what may be one of the greatest of all time. 2023, you did Rihanna. Crazy trajectory, bro.
We skipped a couple, too. We skipped a couple. I was blessed to do the anthems for 21.
Oh, yeah.
With Jasmine Sullivan and Eric Church. And last year did the anthem and Lift Every Voice and Sing with Reba and Shirley Ralph. And had a small part in the halftime show with the Alicia Keys guest segment.
Oh, so, yeah. So cool, dude.
It was cool, man. I've been a part of the last five.
That's amazing.
Six Super Bowl, so it's wild, man. Never in a million years did I think, growing up in Willowboro, New Jersey, that I don't know, you watch the Super Bowl and you see the concert, but I don't know if you'd be like, I'm going to be up there one day.
Yeah, you're watching Michael Jackson Super Bowl.
Yeah. And
is it So since you've done so many of them, is it like a scene that you're in? Is there someone that keeps calling you for the gigs, or is it the artists that happen to be calling you and they just happen to be doing it and you just happen to have all the relationships and you've already done the Super Bowl?
It's like, a little,
where does the call come from?
It's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Justin, I was the MD already. J-Lo and Shakira was interesting because they had their own separate camps. And so the production company said, this is all good, but we need one central person to bring this all together.
Yes.
And here's who we trust. And this is goes back to relationships, is that I've tried to have great relationships with everybody. I've tried for everybody.
Yeah.
And so when they went to their respective teams and said, hey, here's who the Super Bowl wants us to use, each of their separate respective teams say, absolutely, Adam Blackstone is that guy.
Nice.
So I'm thankful for that.
Who was the production company?
J-Lo and Shakira was Ricky Kirshner and Rock Nation.
Yeah,
Ricky
Kirshner.
Uh-huh. So,
amazing.
It was great. And then 22.
So
as you develop the relationship with the NFL and the production company, it becomes a little easier for them to say, we like to use Adam, or for the artist to say, Dr. Dre, who I was working with already, had done Coachella and stuff, we want to use Adam Blackstone. They like, great, that's who we were going to call to.
Yes.
And same with Rihanna. It's like, you know, hey, Adam's her MD, and Omar did that show with me. And the network and the company and NFL says, and the production company says, great. And so, yeah, the relationships matter. And
absolutely.
And, you know, knowing that I know what it takes to deliver the files, knowing what I know what it takes for the rehearsal schedule, knowing what I know how to scale up as well. Each halftime has its own, you know, kind of signature.
Yeah.
BBE thing is really cool.
It's amazing, man.
Yeah.
So I can imagine no matter what, because what is it, 12 minutes, 15 minutes?
About 12 to 14 minutes.
Yeah, 12 to 14 minutes.
About 13:50.
Yeah, about 13:50. Not that you would know exactly off the top of your head, but so you have that, and which is already a hard task to do with any one artist, because anyone that plays the halftime show has a huge catalog of hits, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now to go back to 2022, you have Kendrick, you have Dr. Dre, you have 50, you got Snoop. Mary, you have
Snoop.
M. It's like hard to even remember.
Yeah.
Like, how on earth did you put that set list together? All of those artists in 13 minutes and 50 seconds or whatever.
You know, I that one, ironically enough, was fairly easy to me because Dre knew how he wanted to start.
Right.
Always with an artist specifically of that caliber, it's my job to bring their vision to fruition.
Yes.
I do infuse a lot of my own ideas, but when they tell me, when Justin tells me, and when Jennifer J-Lo tells me, when Dre says, this is how I want to start, I'm like, okay, cool. Let me make it make sense.
Yes.
There was a couple of things in there with 50 and with M and with Mary that it was like, okay, what do we actually do?
Yeah.
Mary being the solo female representative and kind of like the R&B representative. Yes, we knew that Dre was the glue that kept everybody together. But Mary, I wanted Mary to also make an impact in her moment as well. So I had pitched to Dre about doing No More Drama with Hateration. And he was like, just let me hear it and see what it is. So I worked on that for a while.
Because Dre was like essentially exec producer.
For sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Him and Jay-Z.
Yeah, of course. Because Jay-Z's actually got that position, right?
He does, NFL. Yeah.
It all comes back to Jay-Z, bro, which is the fact that that was your first...
Wow.
Platform gig, dude, is so crazy.
Yeah, we have withstanded the test of time.
Unbelievable.
It's really cool. It's a blessing.
Yeah.
I think, again, Dre knowing how he wanted to start and end helped me. And then in between, each of the artists just was like, hey man, tell me what you think is best. You've done this before. You know, I'm with it. I knew I had about, you know, 2.5 to 3 minutes for each person. If you look at it from a times tables point of view.
2.5 to 3 minutes, dude. It's insanely short.
It's pretty crazy, right?
You're like doing a few songs each. in 2.5 to 3 minutes.
Trying to, for Man. Sure, trying to. So, yeah, that's how I put it together. I pitched the idea to everybody, you know, individually. You know, I said, hey, Kendrick, this is what I think would be cool for you, 50, Mary, M, and then Dre and Snoop were, of course, the, you know, the catalyst of starting and ending it together. Yeah. So it was cool.
So is there a club at the top? Who's in it? Who runs it?
Runs what?
This, man. This whole, you are here for 20 years.
Yeah.
Obviously Jay-Z, right? Like, who else
for
is
the
in?
Super Bowl or just in no, general?
Just like, man, the concert touring world, whether that's the Super Bowl or that is whatever. Obviously Jay with Roc Nation and all that. Jay Brown.
Yeah.
Like, who else is up there?
I mean,
you're the MD up there. Who's the creative director? Who's the, like, who is that club?
I mean, it all falls under, could fall under Live Nation.
Yep.
Which is Roc Nation is under Live Nation.
Yep.
You know, the record industry has changed so much. Yeah. It used to be the labels, you know people at the label to say, hey, I got this new artist. She's going to do the VMAs coming up. We need a track. Adam, can you do this? And at that, sometimes I wouldn't even deal with the artist. I would deal with the label.
Yeah.
There's so many independent artists these days. And when I say independent, I mean that possibly doesn't have the huge, huge machine that is very transparent, like who I'm talking to. So, you know, Live Nation has a big factor with that because I've worked with a lot of the touring people at Live Nation for so long. Mm-hmm. Whether that be accountants, whether that be tour managers, whether that be role managers, whether that be audio vendors. And if somebody's looking for somebody, yeah, I might be one of the first names that they
recommend. Yeah.
But also, each gig is my audition for the next gig.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I did Justin Timberlake. So, you know, the next pop guy is like, who did Justin?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
For
sure.
Or
I did Rihanna. So, of course, the next pop girl is saying, well, who did Rihanna? You
yep.
know what I mean? And yep. I did Jill Scott. So the next soulful girl is saying, well, who did Jill? And so I'm always making, and I did Nicki Minaj. So it's like, of course, you know, now that I'm working with Glorilla or something like that, it's like, they're like, we know that that's going to work. Adam did that. So I don't know if there's a hierarchy of the gatekeeping per se, but I will say your work speaks for itself.
Absolutely.
And so they will find you if you do yeah. good work. I have a great reputation in the music and what I do and also for who works for me. So it's like, I do think that plays a big part on the product that the new artist is trying to make.
For sure.
And then if you are a iconic, legendary artist that wants a little bit of a different shift, or they know I do heavy programming or something like that, it yep. kind of is like, hey, let's try this. Reach out to the cat that did whatever.
You yeah, know what absolutely.
I mean? So, that's kind of what it is, you know. It's the relationships,
yeah.
you know what I mean? I've gotten calls from everybody from artists to background dancers to a background singer to the Pro Tools operator be like, yo, I need help with this. Like, I would love to bring you in and,
yes.
you know, whatever, you know what I mean? To the creative director, you know, Fatima Robinson might say, hey, mm-hmm. I'm working with Lenny. Like, what do you think that I should do for da-da-da-da? And not that I'm the MD,
just to,
but
yeah.
it's just us having a banter.
I love that.
Of you know, helping one another out, man.
For
everything
sure.
as well too is like, don't have to be for money.
Yeah,
I hate to say it like that, but it's like the relationship is the equity sometimes.
Absolutely.
Because then Fatima looks out for me when she gets the call to produce the Grammys.
Yep.
She's like, yo, I need you to put this band together for Nas, like big band, like I yeah. know that's your thing, so let's figure that out. And she's like, what you want to do? I said, well, I'm calling Rob Glasper. I'm going to call, you know, Keon Harrell, and I'm calling Kenneth Wellum. And he's like, you think that they would come and be in a big band for Nas? I'm like, I'm a call. Like, yeah. You know, I feel like I'm one of those connectors that could do that. And then we'll do something like super monumental, like we did a couple years ago with this crazy, incredible big band for Nas doing, you know, and him winning his first Grammy.
Yeah, so sick.
So things like that. And, you know, Jesse Collins as well from JCE. I met Jesse doing the BET Awards, and I had like 6 or 7 artists on the BET Awards. So they was paying me like 7 times. And he was like, I should just hire you for the show. Like, just do the whole show. And
you're like,
I
no, you shouldn't. I'll take the 7.
Well, it was interesting because the older I get, the more I know how a show like the BET Awards keeps me relevant by doing the whole show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, again, some of these young artists don't have MDs or they don't have a team. Yep. So the show says to them, this is who we work with. And I make sure that they are cool. And then we end up developing our own working relationship just from that.
Yeah. Amazing, man. Yep. I'd love to talk about BBE as a company, because you know me, I love the business side of things. And I'm always talking on this podcast about people focusing on themselves as an entrepreneur. As a musician, you are an entrepreneur. Like, look at what you have built. This is your entrepreneurial mindset. Your musical talent carried you there and made you have enough demand to where you started a company to then
service
others. And now you're not even out all the time, but you're still leading it from the top, from the high level. So, how does BBE work? Like, what kind of entity is it? Who's a part of the core team?
Yeah, so probably 2012, around the time I got Justin, a lot of my other gigs, I wasn't able to be there. But again, the labels and the artists trusted me to service it out.
Yeah.
Maybe do some programming, send it along with a team of that I chose that they trusted.
Yeah.
And so BBE subconsciously was formed because I was like, here, it's under this umbrella.
Yes.
These people, or at least this service that I'm providing for you. It grew and it got crazy.
Yeah.
And at one point, I had about 250 musicians out on the road in one year.
Crazy.
Yeah. You know, I got a lot of people out there now that even I could say that I got the call and just was like, hey, call this person. Now, whether they know that or not, I don't really know, but that's not my job. But
I can relate to that.
Yeah. You know, it's all good. Yeah. But, that's how that started. And then, you know, my wife being in finances, she's the CFO of our company. She allows me to be creative.
Yes.
And I don't worry about the invoicing and I don't worry about that. I then brought my cousin on, Marche Rice, who was really just shadowing me for a time being. And now she's out as super tour manager with Lauryn Hill and Drake and Chris Brown and... You know, she does Eminem now, but she was able to be my movement and just tell me where I needed to be to make sure that the other entities were running properly. So if I need to pop in on Neo, or if I need to pop in on Demi Lovato, or if I needed to pop in on Janet or Eminem or whatever, it was like, hey, here's the schedule of it all.
Absolutely.
And then just having a core team of solid musicians, knowing that, hey, and background singers and musicians that know I'm gonna make sure we good. We're gonna work. Like, please give me a heads up if you get a call for something else. I'll let you know what's coming.
Yes.
So we have that trust amongst each other as well. And then for me to show them the business, that it's bigger than one gig. It's bigger than playing the drums. It's bigger than playing the bass. It's like, how do we expand and make, you know, mailbox money? And how do we expand and make a splash where, you know, God forbid something happens to our health, we can still continue to work either with our mind or with our sharpness and work creatively in another way. So that's how BBE was formed, and I'm gonna keep trying to spread the gospel of good business.
Absolutely.
It's really about that, man. At some point, these young kids play so good.
Yeah.
It's
wild.
It's super wild.
Yeah.
It's bad. And so what can I do that you know, they may not have the knowledge to do, not that they shouldn't gain the knowledge, but because of my experience.
Well, you're the leader, man.
I'm the leader. And so what can I do to maintain that? They have a platform of upcoming gigs, and I have a platform to continue to make money and feed my family as well. That doesn't necessarily involve me having to go out on the road or like
absolutely play.
So that's been my focus, man. And I feel another shift coming on as well for myself and the company, where it's like, you know, acting as, you know, label all one stop shop A&R, because we don't have that anymore. It seems like
It's all third party.
And I'm kind of like missing seeing developing talent. A lot of times the labels today look for a tune or look for a song that's already kind of buzzing or already popping.
Of course.
But there's so many incredible young gifted artists out there, independent artists that have these small rumblings, or maybe none at all, that you you can tell that those songs have the potential to like be great.
For sure.
So I keep my ear to the ground and look for that talent, but also I'm still a student.
Yeah.
I watch how rock, you know, Nation finds talent and do things. I watch how and read how Clive, you know, picks songs. I watched the story on Jimmy Iovine telling Kirk Franklin yesterday that Stomp was the song and nobody believed in it. You know what I mean? Like, there's something about, I watch how Quincy, you know, allowed Michael to bring him records and he transformed them to make Thriller and all this other things. It's like,
absolutely,
that's kind of where I see my personal self going and being more executive producer.
Absolutely.
Because of the experience that I've had to kind of know what works on a live stage and what doesn't, and hopefully it will transcend into radio and all of that.
For sure.
So it's been cool.
So now with your artist career,
that's one of the toughest.
I can only imagine, bro.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, nobody told me.
Man.
Nobody said it was easy.
So you already, as a music director, were getting the Emmy nominations for, and you won it for the Super Bowl halftime show with Dre and all them. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And I was at the party.
Yeah, man.
Dave. Yeah, celebrating. But let's go. I'm a Blackstone homie fan. Let's
there
go.
There it is. There it
and,
is.
And then, so now you got your artist project. You've gotten multiple Grammy nominations.
Wait,
making it look
Grammy
easy, my guy.
It ain't. I got a whole new respect for indie artists,
man.
Any artist, not even just indie, any artist that has been doing this for a long time and they feel that they don't get the recognition that they deserve, or they feel that it's hard to make a living out of this artistry thing. It's a whole separate respect that I have. I crossed into the artist thing through COVID. I was losing people, man, and like family, friends. I lost a cousin. I lost a friend. We were losing musician friends and homies, and still are.
Yeah,
so many incredible musicians that are no longer here with us that I freaking have their name in my phone still.
And that's
one of the reasons why through COVID I said I'm gonna buckle down this summer and like do something that my children have stake in, do something that my kids own, do something I can put their names on.
Beautiful.
And that's how Legacy was formed. I didn't know what it was going to be. I can't say that I went into the process saying it's going to be jazz, it's going to be gospel, it's going to be R&B, it's going to be pop. I just was trying to make good music.
Yep.
Called a couple of the homies. They sent me some tunes. I had sat down and wrote a couple of tunes as well, and then, you know, put the sauce on it with the features, and Legacy was formed. And then that was September of 22. A couple months later, we made like Obama's playlist,
bro. Come on, dude.
With Around Midnight featuring my Philly girl, Jasmine Sullivan.
Which is pretty much the coolest thing you can make.
Yeah, it was
the
like...
The Obama playlist is like cooler than any other
thing. It was pretty wild, man. It was pretty wild. Yeah. And then we got a Grammy nomination. Yeah. I was like, this feels different.
Yeah.
Now... I'm trying to make it not be a constant chase drug of making music, because that's not why I made the record.
Right.
But it did feel good. Being recognized by your peers, definitely a good feeling. It shows that there is some sort of mutual respect there. You don't always have to have that, but when you get it, it feels cool.
Absolutely.
And so, 3-time Grammy nominated now, a couple albums out. I never thought I would say I have multiple albums out, but I have 3 albums out right now. And I just put my new single out.
With Fantasia.
Super excited about the new music, man. Summertime, reimagined Gershwin classic with a little BBE legacy twist. I'm so excited for it, man. You gotta, everybody go get that, download it, stream it now. Fantasia sang this song 20 years ago to win American Idol. It was one of 3 songs. And so when we talked about this year, how to celebrate that, that's one of the ideas that I came up with, knowing that I was doing my jazz thing. Like, how can we put a 2024 spin on this incredible classic that she had already sang? And I think we accomplished some good things, man. She's sounding incredible, better than ever. I did the arrangement with Melvin Jones on horns and my brother Jamar Jones as well in the rhythm section. And we got us an instant classic, I think.
So sick, man. I love it, man. Yeah. I was jamming it earlier today,
too. Thank you,
too.
Man. Thank you. It takes you on a little roller coaster ride. And
it's epic.
I am really serious about this jazz and this soul thing. Yeah. And it being one of America's oldest forms of music, it allows me to just explore sound and use live instruments and, you know, kind of make it a feel good thing again.
Absolutely. And you're doing a great job at it,
man.
Thank
you, man.
And it's unique to you. It's not like you're making a pop album or a hip hop album. Like,
and even in the jazz space, I'm not the super duper soloist or anything like that, but it feels good to do what you're passionate about. I guess that's the only thing that I would say is, like, you know, even putting a genre on it is interesting, but it's just feel good to me.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. And you're going for the Grammy, so for your consideration.
Yeah. Best jazz performance and best arrangement with instruments and vocals.
The arrangement's crazy.
Thank you.
Arrangement's crazy.
Yeah, feels good, man. It takes us on a lot of different areas of jazz. So it feels good, man, to do something that's very down home to what me and her, you know, kind of wanted to fuse the soul and the jazz together.
Are you writing all that?
Yeah. So, you know, we're getting it together. I'm doing the rhythm mainly first normally, and then I'll do some MIDI horns or whatever.
Yeah.
Melvin Jones then, you know, writes it out.
Yeah.
But also infuses his for sure.
Yeah.
Horn arrangements. And then I kind of like edit from there.
Yeah.
You know, that song actually could have been a 9-minute song that I had to truncate, and kind of that's where my MD, you know, arranging prowess comes in. So it's definitely that. I brought the big band in the studio, and we kind of did the thing, man. So we tried to do our best to represent what that Porgy and Bess Gershwin vibe would be today.
Yes,
you know, for me specifically.
Yeah, so, man, you nailed it. At the same time, too, like, this is your investment, right?
Yeah.
Like, you doing this, like, your day job is BBE,
yeah,
being a musical director.
Yeah.
And now you're chasing your passion project
it
and putting
is
it out there
it
with
is
you
a
being
full
a solo artist.
Passion project.
So how are you balancing the two?
Whew.
What percentage of time are you putting into, like, BBE in the MD world versus your artist world now?
You know, I've had to make some tough decisions.
Yeah.
To sacrifice sometimes gigs that may look cool as an MD to say, but I have an interview as an artist that I've already said that I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And what is the end goal for me?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I've turned down some really big things.
Yeah. I know.
Not to go into super duper detail.
We were talking about one when you showed up today.
Yeah.
And
I mean, the list goes on and on. The people have no idea. Really big things that could have been, I mean, that not have could have been, but they were just big, you know.
Big ass things,
And so I did that for my own artistry. I did that to stay at home and take care of my family at times.
Yeah.
As well. You know, my children deserve and my family deserves more time, even in my opinion, than what I focus in on music.
Yeah.
I don't want to be this successful super duper producer, MD, artist, and my son is like, but you're never home.
Yeah, you know, who are you? Yeah.
It's
not worth it.
That don't go for me.
Yeah.
I'm cool. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I do what I do for my family.
Yeah.
And if they can't be proud of me for being a family man first, then the other stuff don't really matter. And so thankfully, most of the time I have their blessing. You know what I mean? Because they know that I'm going to make it back to home and make it back and do the FaceTimes and do everything that I can to make sure that I feel my presence is felt and you know, turning down some long tours to make sure that that's instilled in them is, you know, it's worth it to me.
So what is the end goal?
I think the end goal, that's a good question. I think that the end goal is to have a product that my son and daughter own and can live past me.
Yeah.
You know, I think the end goal is for people to continue to say BBE way past me being in the music business.
Yes.
I think the end goal is to maintain the integrity of music with BBE way past me as well, which is why I'm here now trying to plant this flag of like, hey, this is how we do this.
Yes.
I love everything that you're doing at Jam Car. I think that you have the same end goal. Jam Car is going to live on for a long time. And I think I want BBE to feel that Adam Blackstone, yes, established it, but like there's a, you know, it also has Apple on it. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And it also has, you know, Toyota
on
it. It's like
branding
there's a brand to it that allows people to, you know who started it and know that they should all, the foundation of it is where it should be carried. So I think that's the end goal. If my family can be proud of me, proud of that, I have succeeded.
Okay, so what about, because I know end goal is a big one, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
What about five-year plan?
My five-year plan? Would love to put out some new artists. I would love to, you know, run a successful situation, you know, to funnel music, all types of music.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many artists out there, man, that have great songs that we just ain't heard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I would love to give that platform, whether that be radio or stage. And that's what I'm doing kind of with my legacy experience. It's like I feel like I've put some people on the stage that people are now their favorite artists.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So that's the end goal, is to highlight new talent, highlight some talent that may not be new, but that we need to be reminded of.
Yep.
And continue to, you know, feed my family through this gift of music.
Absolutely. Is there, who's the main operator of BBE? Is that your wife? Like the, you know, the actual operations outside of the creative and all that.
Probably me and her, you know, like we kind of, I'm I have to get less hands-on.
Yeah. It's a constant battle, bro. It's very hard.
Because
delegating is hard.
If I go into my email, I don't know. I'm going to do it right on camera. If I go into my email right now,
a couple emails. What do we got here?
No. I'm just going to look and say, what's that number say?
I think it says 68,000.
I have to read 68,000 emails still. So I got to get a little less hands-on, but... That's where I'm at.
That's just since the interview started, by the way. A lot of musicians, a lot of our peers listen to this podcast, but also a lot of the next generation listen to it.
For sure.
I'm sure a question that they're dying for is, how does someone get a gig with Adam Blackstone?
It's hard to say because we are a word of mouth business.
Yeah.
But also we are a of need business. And so you have to be of value to me. And I mean, your gift, your whatever your talent is, you know what I'm saying? Everybody can sing.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can play the drums. There's different levels to it. Everybody can play the bass. It's like, but at the same time, like, how is your character?
Yeah.
How is your etiquette on the bus? Do you have a bad reputation with finances?
Yes.
You know, are men and women afraid to be around you in certain spaces?
Are you trustworthy?
Are you trustworthy? Yeah. And all of those things matter. Integrity. All of those things matter more to me than the talent.
Yes.
And so if I'm getting a recommendation from somebody and it's somebody that I trust, you know, if Brian is telling me something, or if you know, my man Justin is telling me, yo, try this person on bass, try this person. I believe, because of the vetting that we've been through in the last decade or so, that I know that I can trust them. So, and then there's other people that are just persistent and like continue to contact me. Perfect example, D. Cobbs, Derek Cobbs. People know how I feel about his programming and his musical direction skills. He's out with Usher right now.
Yeah.
He contacted me for like a year straight, maybe 2009, 2010. He was at Berkeley.
Wow.
And I hadn't listened to the attachment that he sent me. And when I finally got around to the 66,000, right?
Yeah, so it's
that's nothing new. When I finally got around to it, I was like, oh my God, this is some of the best arranging that I've ever heard in my life. Immediately, I was doing Joe Jonas at the time. He had went solo. I called him. I flew him to Philadelphia. And I was like, yo, let's work on this together. I just want to see, because Joe was searching for his sound. I was searching for a newer thing that I could make sure I put on Joe that made sense. And we hit it off right away. Like, you know, that's my guy. He's been working with me ever since. Another newer guy in my squad is Terrence Vaughn, who has been an incredible MD and producer in his own right outside of me, but more in a different space. So I met him at church, at a church recording. One of the sweetest dudes, just cool and humble. And then when you heard the work that he was doing, I was like, where you been, bro? Like, he's like, what you mean? Like, we're actually similar age, so it's not like he's my young boy or nothing. It's just that he wasn't in the space that I was in, and I wasn't in the space that he was in. When I gave him the opportunity to do some pop and some R&B and it was just incredible, because I could hear the trajectory of what he was doing in the gospel space, that how it could translate over to the pop space.
For sure.
Now he's, you know, MD and SZA and doing Renee Rapp and all these things that I'm able to like plug him on, and
it's amazing.
Be cool. So it's word of mouth.
Yeah.
It's letting your work speak for itself.
Yep.
At the end of the day.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Again, everybody has the talent, but like whatever the platform is, make sure it's great. There's some things that I seek out. I'll watch VMAs and I'll be like, this is killing. Like, let me, who did this arrangement of, you know, what, Katy Perry or something like that. I'm like, oh, Chris Pooley, that guy, like, you know, let's link or whatever, you know what I mean? And he's doing his thing, I'm doing my thing. Or if it's, you know, when I watch Doja Cat, I just be like, this is some of the most incredible musicianship, and I
wild. See that they're killing it.
DJ out there and D Cobbs, you know, my guy, and you know, I'll perfect example is like Kyrie Tyler, like you know what he has been doing online prior to Beyonce, right?
All the black suit music, crazy arrangements,
and then the arrangements, and then you hear the drummers kind of playing too, and then when you get an artist that is looking for something like that, he pops up in my head, and then him linking with Rance and Damo, and it just kind of makes sense. So it's like, let your work speak for itself. I'm fans of so many of the young cats that are doing that. And you know, your spirit has to match the talent as well. So
I was going
to
say, everyone you're mentioning are all like
great guys.
Great sweetheart guys, great people.
They just great dudes, man. I got to be honest. It's like, I try not to have any assholes in my crew. I try not to.
And then you got to weed them out, you know?
Yeah, but I think that that's the first thing for me, is just like that, you know, the integrity, your humility, and then letting your work speak for itself. You know what I mean? Like, and then being of value in the space that you're in. The other thing that I will say, and this is going to get a lot of slack, but like, I just don't think that location matters. I was never the dude to think that I had to move to LA or have to move to Atlanta or something. It's like, yeah, if you take over where you are, look at Q, Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Right?
Man.
You know what I'm saying? To Kyrie again, it's like, you know, Ohio. It's like, if you that dude there, we will find you.
The
you
internet is, I mean? The internet.
Yeah.
Is
and
there.
Yeah. Yeah. And word of mouth, too. Yeah. It's just kind of like, man, like, you know.
Make people feel something. No matter where you are, you can make people feel something.
For sure. That's what I was doing in Philly.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, you don't live in LA or Philly or New York.
Yeah. So, but that's what I was doing when I was at school. I was like so permeated the city of Philadelphia that it was like you were going to see me somewhere. It's like that big dude's everywhere.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Whether I was sitting at the studio just waiting on my turn or at an open mic or at church or soaking up, watching other people play before me for sure and waiting my turn. I just was a student so hard that when my turn was called, I tried to make the most of it and it kind of didn't matter, in my opinion, where I was. So the good work started to speak and then I got to work with Jill and music and, you know, Vivian Green and the Roots, who at the time weren't on Fallon. So it was like, yeah, you could consider them a East Coast Philadelphia band, but then like, look how that has blown up. So
oh my God,
as I was able to cultivate my home and like make a name for myself home, it was able to spread to the masses. So, you know, just do what you do, you know, to work with me, I would say do what you do best.
Mm-hmm.
Your work will speak for itself. Integrity will speak for itself. And then also be persistent.
Yeah.
I don't mind the constant reach outs when it's like you believe in yourself.
Yeah. Do it in a nice way, but you know, be consistent, confident.
I don't mind consistency.
Don't get butthurt if you don't get a response all the time.
I definitely love confidence. You know, I showed you, I got 66,000 emails. So, you know, it's not that I'm trying to be, you know, corny by not reaching back out, but, you know, I'm not.
You're busy.
I'm busy. I'm not super huge on Instagram, you know, but like, you know, I see the people.
And that's another thing you were saying earlier, like you got to provide value, right?
You have to.
So if someone's bringing you value, if they're really thinking, how can I bring Adam value?
Yeah.
Right. And really thinking that, you're most likely going to grab that little bit of attention that they need to grab of yours.
For sure. There's been people in my camp that came in the space that I needed them.
Yeah.
And then transitioned into what they may have wanted to do just by being around. Songwriters, engineers, programmers who really wanted to play keys.
You
know what I'm saying? Like that's happened to me as well, where it's like, yo, I really do this, but because I know you need this piece, this I'm down to, you know, do this as well. So it's been cool. You know what I mean?
So speaking of busy people, what is the greatest lesson Jay-Z has ever taught you?
Jay-Z has a quote that everybody has genius level talent in them.
Mm-hmm.
How do you pull it out of you to impact the world? And that's a self thing. Nobody can do that for you.
Right.
And so he's taught me to reach and tap into my genius. He's taught me, to be a person of high value that can help others. You know what I'm saying? Everybody you see around him, I look at LeBron the same way. Are they bosses? And so I try to give my squad a platform to become their own boss for sure. Yeah.
Eminem, you've been working with for a super long time.
Yeah.
One of the most important people in
another
in his
gig
career.
I got through Questlove.
Another from Questlove. Yeah, he gave your number to Paul Rosenberg, right?
Yes,
is that the story?
Did.
Why
don't
I know that? And here you are years later, still with Eminem. You're about to play like F1 with him.
Yeah.
And hopefully I see you in Abu Dhabi.
Let's do it.
What is it like working with Eminem? What is your relationship with him like, and how do you musical direct with someone like Eminem?
Yeah. M now.
Yeah.
We just trust each other.
He puts out
these, incredible albums, a little twisted sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, I can't say that I was the hugest listener of his music. I was always been a fan, but I had to talk about diving into it when I got the call. I'm like, let me figure this out. And I hear how Dre's bounce has impacted his tracks and his albums. I hear how there's live instruments on there. I hear how he loves to make a loop move and tell a story. So our relationship now is that he'll say, hey man, I love this show that you've put together. let's take this same core show, but how can we differentiate it or make it feel new by starting different and all of that? And I'll say, hey, let's try this song. He's like, oh, I like that, but I don't like this. So it's very communicative and back and forth, but he allows me to do my thing. But again, with him telling me, these are the songs that I want to do now, you make it feel right. So I love that about our relationship. I trust him to, when he says I don't want to do that, I'm not trying to beg him to do an idea that I did just because I did the idea. I'm like, okay, there's a reason why you don't want to do it. It's not my place to try to convince you, but how can I influence you to either listen to it? And if you don't want to listen to it, what's the solution? Let's figure out a solution together. It's very collaborative.
What about back in the early days of Eminem, when you first started with him and you're building the trust, and there's a lot of anger and aggression in that show, and you know, he's clearly gone through a lot and he really puts it all out there.
Yeah, one of the approaches that I did for my first Eminem shows was to make sure the band matched the track. Mm-hmm. He had been a track show artist for so long that I did not want to differentiate from what he was used to. But what I did do, and this is how I gained his trust, was say, hey, in a live show, you can take moments to go grab a water, get your breath. He raps fast and aggressive and a lot, so he needed those moments, which I don't think he had in a track show.
Wow.
I said, hey, I'm gonna build these 8 bars of a transition in here. You can go off and chill for a second. Let's let the guitar player take a solo on cleaning out my closet, and that allows you to get your breath, maybe change your t-shirt or something. And those are things that he may not have thought about while doing a show with a DJ. You know what I'm saying? And that's how we kind of seem small, you know, to a musician, but that's a big deal to an artist that's stuck in their ways to say, oh, wow, the band allows me to get a breather here. Oh, wow. Keeps the vibe going. These songs are now, Adam put these 3 songs that are in A minor all together, so my cadence and my tonality can almost remain the same and I don't have to jump, you know what I mean? And tempos can fluctuate and stuff like that, and it doesn't feel super herky-jerky.
For sure.
So that's kind of what I've implied and brought into the Eminem situation.
So many words. So you also did one of the most epic tours ever, Legends of the Summer, Jay-Z and Justin Timberlake together. So since you had already done Jay-Z for a while and you were MDing Justin Timberlake, like, do you have anything to do with that tour coming together and becoming a thing? Or was that just another thing where you're like, I'm in both camps?
So again, that was at the start of my Justin collab career. And he was camped out with Jay at the studio for a long time. So they had records together. And I think I may have been like, one of the things that I know I did was in the 2020 situation, I put a couple Jay flips in our live show. And it just kind of then just made sense. He was like, yo, I like how that's going. You put Give It to Me in like another Pharrell song, you know, Rock Your Body.
Yeah.
And then I think that allowed him, I would like to think that he was like, oh, this is going to be easier than I think it is. It's going to be easier than what I thought it would be, us doing this tour together, because we have songs that have similar tempos. Him and Pharrell have a bunch of records. Jay-Z worked with Pharrell. Him and Timbaland have a bunch of records. Jay-Z worked with Tim. And then Jay has a bunch of singy hooks that Justin, I had pitched Justin to like sing on the choruses of the songs. Yeah. You know what I mean? So not that I had anything to do with the tour coming together, but it was easier to make happen because we were all very similar musical family.
Man, for sure. So cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
Questlove.
Yes.
The man changed your life.
For sure, and continues to.
Wow. What's your relationship like with him? What do you think is most special about that?
Man, my relationship with him is, for sure, he's the big brother. I'm the little brother. He's my MD.
Yeah.
Anytime I need any advice, musically, non-musical, he is, you know, he's a phone call away. I pull up on him. We just ran into each other at the Usher show and hugged like we never seen each other ever before. I call him for advice all the time, man. Like, just, you know, whether that be Rock and Roll Hall of Fame show advice. He's an encyclopedia of music.
Yeah.
He is my encyclopedia. When I don't feel like reading something,
like, can I get the Cliff Notes Quest?
I'm going to get the Questlove Cliff Notes. That's a good analogy of him. He continues
that's a good book
to
he should do.
Yeah, he continues to raise the bar in music about his him directing these documentaries.
Oh yeah.
He continues to spread the knowledge of how music has evolved. Because I do feel like if you don't know the history of it, we have a tough time to either evolve from it or just replicate the bad things in business specifically. He is one of the ones that taught me to spread the knowledge and spread the wealth where you can. He is not a gatekeeper of anything. He's like, yo, call this person, call that person, tell them I sent you, it's all good. And I've been able to take on that same moniker and say, call this person, tell them I sent you, and it's all love. He becomes the go-to person. You know, you talked about who the go-to is. Yeah. I'm going to say him over anybody.
Yeah.
You know, Jay calls him, you know what I'm saying? And ask him his opinion on a mashup. I've seen DJs call him, from EDM people to hip hop to soul. I've seen network execs call him and ask them to put something together for television. I've seen the Oscars call him. I've seen Rock and Roll Hall of Fame call him to be the man. So it's like, you know, if I'm ever striving to do anymore, you know, because I've done a lot, but it would be in his footsteps to kind of show the evolution of what a musician could be. He is really a famous drummer. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
People don't think about that enough. Like, and he's made his job as a drummer and his love for music into a multi-million dollar business of growth and expansion.
Yeah.
From producing Hamilton and investing in Broadway plays.
Yeah.
And, you know, directing Summer of Soul and gathering footage. And, you know, he directed, I don't know if y'all see, one of the craziest things that people don't know, he directed, Jay-Z got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he directed the package to have everybody speak about Jay. So it's like things like that where... Man,
he's everywhere.
Yeah, and he's not there as the drummer.
Yeah.
Less than 50% as the drummer.
Yeah, these
days
for sure.
He's there as the mind.
He's the mind. He's the producer, the exec producer, the curator.
He's the curator. Yeah. He's the
encyclopedia with
really
context.
Is. Yeah. So he has been always somebody that I've strived to be like that. He inspires me. I'm still super thankful to call him brother.
Yeah.
I'm still super thankful he plays on my records. You know, I don't take that for granted at all.
Absolutely.
You know, so my first ever single I put out as an artist, Around Midnight, he was the drummer. And James Poyser as well. James
Love
continues
James,
you know, sow into me. And him and Sean G, you know, really the whole Roots crew, man. It's just like, those are my guys, and they call me at any time. I got they back, and I'm thankful that they have mine.
That's so cool, man.
Yeah.
All right, final question. I'm a big watch fan. What do we got on the wrist? Let's show them the watch.
That's
two-tone.
So crazy, because I was looking at yours too. This is, you know, a little light two-tone Date Just 2 Rolex.
Love a Date Just.
40 millimeter.
Gotta be the 40,
the
bro.
Yeah, man. It's
got the fluted bezel, looking good.
Little bezel, little diamond cut bezel. It's cool. And
show the camera. Let's get in there. Come on. We love.
Can I say something about this watch?
Please. Yeah. What does this watch represent to you? Because one of my, where I get romantic about watches is, like, John Mayer actually said this about how he considers his watches, you know, they're timepieces, but not in terms of like the time that it tells, but more the story and the significance of the
watch
and what it means in the moment of time.
And I might shed a tear because I cried like a baby. I turned 40 years old 3 years ago. It's 2 years now, but I'm turning 43 this year in December. So 2.5 years ago, one of my besties in the music business, Dante Winslow, took me to my favorite LA food spot bossa nova.
Love bossa nova.
Had a chicken lasagna, I'm sure. And he presented me with this plaque for my 40th birthday, and it had, I'm going to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times 5. So 25 columns on it of names. And these were people, whew, I'm getting a little choked up. Wow. These were people that they had felt I had impacted their lives in the music business. And they all, from what I understand, gave $500 and they chipped in and got me this watch.
Oh,
so
it was like
kind of crazy, man. So
that's beautiful.
Those dudes and females on there, this is what that watch symbolizes for me. And yeah, it's just great, you know, to know
that's
that
so
you
have
impacted people's lives in a good way. And then, you know, we talked about how some people know and some people don't know, but those specific people, they showed improved, you know, financially. They didn't have to do that, but you know, I've sewn into them gigs, and I'm sure what they gave for this, you know, was just a token to for me. So it felt really good to get that. I cried like everybody knows I'm a cry baby, so I don't mind. But like, I cried like a super baby, man, because people don't have to do that, man. You know what I'm saying? It's like they can just take the gig and just ride off. Those people specifically showed me in a monetary way what I meant to them.
Yeah.
And so this is what that watch symbolizes for me. Is it symbolizes family.
Wow, man. Yeah, so I love that show.
I appreciate that. Whoo, that was deep. You almost got me, bro.
Thank you for sharing that, man. That's so beautiful.
No
man.
Doubt.
What a special thing, because you always look at it on your wrist and just remember how loved you are.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And if anything ever goes down, I know that those people got me. You know what I'm saying?
It's a good crew around you.
For sure.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Adam Blackstone, greatest in the game. Thank you for taking the time, bro.
It. Thank you for having me, and I'm so proud of you, bro. We're going to keep it moving, collab even more.
Go with Elmo. This is the stuff, man.